Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Miriam Powell's new book, The Browns of California, The Family Dynasty That Transformed a State and Shaped a Nation, is a panoramic history of the state of California and its impact on the nation, from the Gold Rush to Silicon Valley, told through the lens of a family dynasty that led the state for nearly a quarter century. Even in the land of reinvention, the story is exceptional. Pat Brown, the beloved father who presided over California during an era of unmatched expansion. Jerry Brown, the cerebral son who became the youngest governor in modern times and then returned three decades later as the oldest. The new book is The Browns of California, the family dynasty that transformed a state and shaped a nation. It is a great pleasure to welcome Miriam Powell to this week's book show. Miriam, thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks. It's always great to be here.
You know, I saw this book come across my desk, and I didn't realize you were local at the time, but I looked at the book and I thought two things. One, wow, I didn't know this was a story. I knew about Jerry Brown. I didn't know about the family history, number one. And number two, thank God somebody wrote this. That's very, very cool. So what brought you to that point?
So I am a transplanted New Yorker. I was a New Yorker until 2000, and now I've been in California since then. And kind of in some ways sort of very much still see California or understand the lens that New Yorkers see California through. And in a way, this is kind of the book that I wish I could have read when I was moving to California, because it's an attempt to sort of to talk about the history of a place that is really a very unusual, different world unto itself. And what brought me to it directly was listening to Jerry Brown talk in his State of the State about his great-grandfather, August Shuckman, who had crossed the plains in 1852 and settled in Northern California, and just thinking about how the span of this family kind of really encapsulates the history of California, which joined the Union only in 1850 as the 31st state.
For folks who are just listening to us and haven't seen the book, it's a large book. It's a very detailed, long book, and there's a lot in here. But it's fascinating. The history is fascinating. So where did you want to start? Because this really is it's a four-generation story.
Mm-hmm. It's a four-generation story, and for those who are not familiar with California political history, which is many people, Jerry Brown's father, Pat Brown, was the governor for 8 years during the sort of height of the expansion of California in the late 1950s and early 60s, was then defeated by Ronald Reagan. So it really is a family dynasty that I think many people like you are not really aware of, because it's California, because it's the West Coast, the Brown family has not gotten the same kind of attention as the Kennedys or even the Cuomos, where we have another father-son combination.
Right.
So I wanted to start in 1850, when California becomes a state, because there's so much in those early years after the Gold Rush that really kind of shapes how the state develops and the importance of education, of immigration, of all kinds of things like that. And I wanted to tell that story through the four generations of this family.
What is fascinating, too, about the story is that, and I'm certainly not telling you your business, but you know,
I love to hear what other people think, because I lived with it a long time, so it's great.
But I think you would agree, there's enough for a book just in Jerry Brown.
Right, absolutely.
I mean, that guy is fascinating in his history of being governor, you know, Governor Moonbeam,
right,
and then becoming a real force in the Democratic Party, in the National Democratic Party, running for president, and then reemerging, right, coming back, and really many people say, well, you've saved the state,
right,
of
absolutely,
California. So there's a book just there, not to mention all of the stuff that got him to that place.
Right. And I deliberately chose not to do a biography of Jerry Brown,
right,
but to do this as a California history, because, again, to me, this family really exemplifies in so many ways the things that are different about California and special in some ways. And the family is so intimately connected to the themes of public higher education, water, the importance of the environment, things that are, and immigration, things that are very much sort of core issues in California. Jerry Brown's sister, Kathleen Brown, was the state treasurer and ran for governor against Pete Wilson and was defeated in large part because of Prop 187, which has sort of been emerged again as a, I mean, to refresh people's memory, Prop 187 was the anti-immigrant measure in California that passed and was ultimately unconstitutional, but it was sort of credited for the start of the downfall of the Republican Party in California in many ways. And there's some sense that the rest of the country is having a Prop 187 movement. So through Kathleen Brown, we get into that whole issue of the anti-immigrant movement in California and the emergence of Latino political power. So there are just so many ways in which the family ties into interesting strands about California that are very relevant to the rest of the country as well.
So let us begin with August Shuckman and this immigrant who crossed the plains, 1852, mm-hmm. and what brought him to the United States.
He left Prussia. He was a middle son, and he really left because he was going to get drafted. That was the actual motivation. And he lands in New York, spends a couple years sort of working his way across the country, and then goes west in 1852. And we're really fortunate, and the family has been incredibly generous with their genealogical research, that he kept a diary for part of that time. So we have an account of how he crossed the plains in 1852, which was the single most crowded year of the on the Oregon Trail and so on. And he settles as an innkeeper on land that is still in the family, and that is the land where Jerry Brown has built his retirement home. So again, there's sort of this great bookend there of the family and the state. His youngest daughter, Ida Shuckman, leaves Colusa, which is a kind of barren part of the state, not much there, and escapes to San Francisco at the turn of the century, which is a wonderful literary world, very exciting place to be, the Paris of the West. And she meets Eddie Brown, who is the son of Irish immigrants who left Tipperary during the potato famine and landed in Framingham, Massachusetts, and come to California because California was a place that welcomed the Irish in a way that that the East Coast did not. And that's a sort of whole other interesting facet of the state of California in that era, is the way that it was Catholic, it was Irish, it was immigrants, and all of that came out of that spirit of the gold rush that brought people from all over the world to California sort of overnight. The place exploded. So she marries Eddie Brown, and Pat Brown is their oldest son, and that's the lineage.
Early on in the book, you have a chapter on that's similarly titled the Roosevelt Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the politics of this family, because it's deeply ingrained in the story, isn't it?
Yes. And Pat Brown grows up as a Republican, as many people did in San Francisco at that time, and then switches parties in 1934 and becomes a Roosevelt Democrat and becomes, I mean, one of the most diehard Democrats, passionate about the party as that you can imagine. But that's a turning point where San Francisco goes from being Republican to Democratic, and San Francisco then being the hub of California. Pat is a politician from, he says later on that he ran for president of every club in high school, even when he wasn't a member. I mean, that's the kind of guy he was. He was just the student body guy, the cheerleader, in a hurry, skips college, goes directly to law school. His father was, made his money as a gambler, actually running a gambling operation. And, Pat Brown's first race was as a Republican for Assembly. He lost, and then he became a Democrat. And it's that era where government was doing things for people, and that he deeply believed that the role of government was to help those who could not help themselves. And that's really the world that Jerry Brown grows up with. I mean, his father is elected San Francisco DA when Jerry's 5 years old.
You alluded to this, but it seems that the subtitle of the book, The Family Dynasty That Transformed a State and Shaped a Nation, this is very much a California story, though, isn't it?
Yes, yes, it is. But there's so much of what California does, and this is something that I really want to talk to in this sort of tour in the East, especially because people in California tend to understand this better. There's so much that happens in California that affects what happens in the rest of the country.
Sure.
And I think we're seeing this a lot now with the environmental initiatives, for example. You know, when California, by virtue of its enormous size, Los Angeles is bigger than 43 states, and that's just L.A. alone. So when California enacts standards for car emissions, for example, that ultimately affects the rest of the country. And so there is so much that starts there that ends up spreading. And the immigration we're seeing again, I think also California is a majority minority state at this point. Latinos are the largest ethnic group and have
right.
been. You know, that's also something that sort of has been spreading east, so to speak.
I don't mean in any way to liken the two families, but just to use it as an example. You know, you think of, and I'll eventually get to my point, I promise, which is that you look at the Kennedy family, mm-hmm. and a Kennedy runs, and Kennedy has almost ensured a victory. What I found fascinating about the Brown story is it seems like they always had to fight. That there was always, it was never just a foregone conclusion that because of Brown was running or because of this lineage, because of this history, that they were going to win an office.
I think that's true. I mean, there is a sense, when Jerry Brown runs for his first statewide office in 1970 as Secretary of State, there's no question, his father's only been out of office for 4 years. There's no question that if his name wasn't Edmund
sure.
G. Brown, he wouldn't have
right.
been elected. After that point, though, I think, you know, he makes it on his own. And he goes from being the most popular governor in the state early on in his tenure in the 70s to one of the least popular. And then, you know, has to fight to come back, really. He loses a race for Senate in 1982. He goes off to India and Japan and, you know, has a whole sort of reinvents himself in a whole lot of ways. And has to then figure out, how does he come back? And that's a fascinating part of the story. And I think also a very California, that idea of reinvention, that you can reinvent yourself in that way. But I think your point is really good. I mean, they did not, Pat Brown grew up in a, you know, not poor, but lower middle class
right.
family, and did not sort of come by any of that naturally. And although by the time Jerry Brown grew up, he was in a middle, you know, his father was an established political figure. They were not a wealthy family. And California also, again, because of its size, you know, we think of California as being so blue and so Democratic. But even when Republicans were only 25% of the state, that's almost 5 million voters. So there is, you can't just walk into office there. I mean, I think that's true. I think you have to sort of prove yourself. And his decision to go in 1998 and run for mayor of Oakland, which surprised even a lot of his close friends who thought it was crazy, but as a way of rising again within the political system is a really a fascinating sort of trajectory too.
Why do you think that, and he came close, but why do you think that his message did not catch on nationally when he was running for national office?
You know, I mean, there are different issues each time. He ran in 1976, jumped into the race quite late when Carter already had a significant
right.
advantage. Did really well. I mean, now it's actually the year in which he did the best. And there was some sense that had he entered early, maybe he'd only been governor for a year and a half. He was 38 years old. So at that point, he sort of starts too late to catch up. 1980 is kind of the disaster. He's often said, I should have gotten out of the race when Ted Kennedy got in. You know, he was challenging an incumbent president for the nomination. That was a tough race. It
right.
didn't really work. And then in 1992, he sort of takes on the Clinton machine, you know, and it was always a very underdog, in some ways a Bernie Sanders-like crusade.
Right.
You didn't take any, wouldn't take money, contributions over $100. So it was very much the kind of outsider race that was in some ways more to make a point, to raise issues, and to begin to reestablish himself as a political figure after having been out of the scene. So that would have been a very hard race to actually win.
And you mentioned as Oakland mayor, but then after the Schwarzenegger years, mm-hmm. he comes and it's almost, now this is an outsider's perspective, which is challenged, this perspective is challenged a little bit in the book, but my take on it was, here's a guy who is there after the Schwarzenegger years, the voters of California say, oh, okay, we need somebody who knows what they're doing.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good shorthand way of doing it. And his, you know, he turns his age into this advantage of, like, you know, experience
right.
counts at my
sure.
age, this is all. And he becomes, I mean, one of the things that's fascinating to me about him as a politician is, you know, having covered Albany and New York politics, which are so different, he's not afraid of delivering bad news. He's very upfront about saying, I mean, you see that in the wildfires now, where he sort of says, you know, this is bad, it's going to get worse, we're fighting nature, we're not on the right side, but we're going to figure it out. You know, we're going to have to go. So there's some way in which I think people respond to his candor, which is quite unusual in a political figure. He's quite open about talking about problems. He's not afraid to say negative things, unlike most politicians. And so he took on that sort of challenge of, okay, the finances are a problem, but we're going to figure it out, and this is what we have to do. And then he managed to sell. He was very clear on the fact that he was not going to do anything to push through a tax increase, which might have been possible, without public approval. And so he goes to the voters with this referendum to raise taxes and gets it through, and really sort of paints that as a, do you want better schools? Do you want to cut money? This is the alternative. This is where we are. And so I think that that sort of that candor and that level of experience, I mean, yes, after Arnold, who was embraced as this, you know, the alternative to
right.
to a very staid governor that was when things were collapsing. But yeah, and I mean, California goes from being branded a, you know, ungovernable, dystopian, dysfunctional state to having a very strong economy.
And before I move the subject away from Jerry Brown, also, and this probably can be fact-checked to be inaccurate, but so I'll correct it by saying he was one of the first outspoken state office holders to really start going after Trump and the Trump administration.
Yeah. So I would correct that in a different way, in the sense that he does not tend to go after Trump personally. In fact, he's avoided that. In the early days, there were other Democrats in California who were very outspoken about attacking
yeah.
Trump. That is not sort of his style. He is focused on the policy. He will go after him on specific things, like, you know, to say that climate change is a hoax is insane. But it's always very issue focused. It's not personal. It's about the policy issues. And yes, I mean, he was very outspoken early on, because a lot of the issues that Trump is, you know, a lot of Trump's agenda very, very much clashes with the values of Brown and of Californians in general, and particularly on issues like the environment and immigration, where he's been very outspoken about the efforts to protect certain, you know, those values that are enshrined in California law at the moment.
Where do you think the Brown family dynasty stands now and in the future?
Well, he's kind of the end of the line on it. There are no, he has one of his niece in the next generation, one of his nieces, Kathleen Kelly, is a very well-respected judge in San Francisco, which is the only public office holder at this point in the family. I think there are sort of enormous parts of his legacy, a word that he doesn't like to use, because a legacy is something that happens after you're dead, and he has no intention of fading away. I think he will continue to be a force on issues that he cares about, and that will be particularly climate change and nuclear proliferation, and that he will attempt to continue to play a role both nationally and internationally in trying to address those, you know, very serious existential threats to the planet. And that will be his work after leaving office.
One of the things that you mentioned early on, that you said one of the points that you wanted to make on the East Coast, is you talk about this West Coast family and this West Coast political story, is the impact that California has had on the rest of the country. Obviously blue. And I'm curious as we look even at the midterms of what impact California continues to have on the national public discourse.
So it's interesting because I think I just wrote a piece, an op-ed that ran in the New York Times last week about the party of California,
right,
and sort of arguing that there are some issues that actually sort of transcend political parties. And political partisanship in California is also, it's a whole other conversation, but parties do not play the same strong role that they do there. So although we outside of California think of it as being this Democratic bastion, and numerically it is, issues like the environment, very much Ronald Reagan, when he was governor of California, signed some of the strongest environmental measures, created the Air Resources Board, the precursor to the Coastal Commission that protects the coast, and so on. So I think that there are things about the West in general, and California in particular, that transcend those sort of traditional political lines. And from that arise issues like environmental protection that tend to ripple across the country and have that sort of effect, or the embrace of immigrants as an important part of our world, our culture, our economy. Some of them are more obvious, like car admission standards, and some of them I think are more subtle, like the way in which Latinos are integrated into the political process and become, more of a force and more of a voice.
It's strange even for me to think of Jerry Brown as an elder statesman of our political world, and yet here he is, but he's
80 years old.
Right. So that seems we need people like him, don't we? Just sort of say,
absolutely.
Oh, here's where we were and this is where we're going. On both parties, obviously.
Absolutely. And I think that, when I said that he'll continue to play a force in his own way, I mean, I think that's sort of his track record, because he said he will continue to sort of reinvent himself in different ways. He's got a mind that sort of goes a million miles an hour, and he will continue to sort of be intellectually engaged with the world and with social justice in some form. But he's pretty sui generis, and they're not, he's a rather unusual political figure. So we need people, but we need a new generation. So, I don't know who the heirs are to that tradition, really.
How did he help in the writing of the book?
He talked to me. He cooperated. We had several long conversations. He otherwise let me do whatever I wanted, talk to people. If people checked with him, he said, fine, talk
right
to her, which I think he would have done. I mean, he's not someone who is controlling about any of that, which is great for me. So I was happy to do my own work.
I asked the question because I was just fascinated by, is he interested in his own family history?
Very much so.
So.
And I think one of the reasons that he was interested in the book and interested in what I was doing is because, I became interested by listening to him talk about his great grandparents, and he's fascinated in tracing that. He's done a lot of work sort of to bring together cousins and far flung and trace different parts of the family, and had family reunions up at the ranch that his great grandfather owned. So he's very engaged with his own family history, the land, the importance of the land as a place, and what he can learn from that history, who was there, what they grew, how it's changed over time. very much a student of that history and absorbed with it.
The book is beautiful and really just an incredible story. It's entitled The Browns of California, The Family Dynasty That Transformed a State and Shaped a Nation. The book is published by Bloomsbury. Miriam Powell, a great pleasure to have you on the program. What a delight.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, The Browns of California, The Family Dynasty That Transformed a State and Shaped a Nation. The book is published by Bloomsbury. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.